various artists.
So you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
The National Grid is a graphic design journal based in Aotearoa. Having started publishing in 2006 with the editorship of Jonty Valentine and Luke Wood, the National Grid became recognised for its dedication to graphic design research, practices and features from local and international practitioners and theorists, having a unique, expansive view of graphic design that embraced its social and cultural impact as a whole. After the project came to a halt in 2012, Luke Wood, Matthew Galloway and Katie Kerr have now revived the journal for 2025, with issue 9 set to launch on Monday. Not quite a magazine and not quite an academic journal, the National Grid seeks to walk the line between professional practice and academia and art and design, with its 9th issue taking on the current climate of design education, looking back into Pacifica publishing histories and sketching out diagrams for possible futures. I had a korero with co-editor and co-founder Luke Wood about its beginnings and where the National Grid is now.
The National Grid was an idea we had a little bit before that. So I set it up with a guy called Jonty Valentine, who was teaching graphic design back then at AUT. And I had just started teaching at Canterbury University. And we'd both recently done our masters. Jonty had done his over at Yale, and I'd done mine at RMIT. And we were both interested in writing about design. And at the time, there was only really one place to do that in New Zealand. It was a magazine called Pro Design. And it doesn't exist anymore, but it was a very kind of work-focused kind of trade journal. And both of us did actually write for that a couple of times, but didn't kind of really like it. It wasn't the kind of stuff we wanted to write about. Both Jonty and I had a background in art publishing, kind of all throughout the 90s, really, the 1990s. We'd both worked as graphic designers in museums and for art galleries and stuff like that. So, yeah, we had this kind of pretty deep background in art publishing. And because of that, we had been, you know, kind of reading lots of art writing. And so we were aware that art got written about in a way that design didn't. Which, you know, in hindsight, I would say is that it's sort of more, it's normal for art to be talked about as part of kind of culture and society, whereas design, especially back then and in the kind of platforms that existed, was really only being talked about as a sort of tool for business, which I guess that's what kind of connected Jonty and I. We didn't really care about design as a tool for business. That just wasn't interesting to us. Like, we understand that's what most design or designers work for, but we just didn't care about that. And so, yeah, we wanted to kind of write about design in a way that was more like kind of friends of ours who were art writers. And so the only way really we could see to do that was to start a publication. And I guess because we were designers, we knew a lot about publishing, so it felt easy enough to kind of set that up. But we had a lot of anxiety at the start about being sort of charlatans or dilettantes, like we weren't writers. And so it was a massive learning curve. And so it ran from 2000, and I think the first one was published in, was it 2005? Yeah, right. And then so the last one we did in that first run was in 2012, and that was issue number 8. I mean, I guess the next question would be, why did we stop? It came to a kind of slow grinding end. So one of the weird things about the National Grid was because it was all about New Zealand design, but we never really sold many in New Zealand. We sold them, most of them, overseas. And we had a pretty good distribution network going of like lots of little independent bookstores in just kind of major cities around the world, which was great. So we were selling them. But back then, even though that doesn't feel like that long ago to me, it's kind of, it pays to remember that PayPal existed, but people didn't really trust it massively. And so the bookstores we were dealing with, it was kind of a real pain in the ass for them to have to pay us through like international bank transfers. It was just a lot more complicated. And so some of the shops we sold most copies through to this day have still not paid us. Like, we're owed like $10,000 by a shop in New York and a similar amount from a shop in Amsterdam.
That's
long
nuts.
Since given up on getting. So that was kind of one big problem. And then the other big problem was that we were both academics and the university didn't really like the publication because it wasn't really an academic journal. And that was really important to us that it wasn't an academic journal, because our experience of that is that no one reads academic journals. Other academics, maybe. But we were really interested in the National Grid being a sort of platform between academia and professional practice. And so we sort of stuck to our guns on that, but that meant that we didn't get any support from the universities we worked for. And so that kind of is what kind of just kind of broke our backs in the end. And the fact, you know, it was just two of us doing it, and it's a lot of work.
For sure. Yeah. You spoke there, of course, about, you know, why you guys stopped, but we're here, of course, today because after 13 years since your last issue in 2012, you're reviving the National Grid, now with a team of three of you editing it, yourself, Matthew Galloway, and Katie Kerr, as well as an external editorial board of eight others, a much larger team to hopefully maybe fix a couple of those issues there. But what was kind of the impetus to revive it for 2025?
Well, actually, so just after lockdown, I had started thinking a lot about trying to set up a design research group. I think lockdown was important because I, you know, like we all did, kind of noticed the kind of burgeoning culture wars that were happening. And I was kind of really interested in the roles design kind of played or didn't play in that kind of new world that seemed to emerge from that whole COVID thing. Part of this also is the fact that I work down here at Canterbury University. Christchurch feels kind of isolated. You know, it's not, there's not a big design community here. And I also live way out of town, so I'm not super connected. And I sort of knew that I missed how connected we were when we were doing the National Grid. Like, we had contributors from all over New Zealand, but also we met a lot of people internationally. And I sort of had come to miss that, and then was also kind of interested in design in a sort of more, I guess, political way because of what was happening after 2020. And so I had this idea to put together a design research kind of group or network or something that would sort of help connect. Probably at the time I was just thinking it's design academics from different universities around New Zealand, polytechs, and that anyone kind of engaging in design research could be part of this group. So I reached out to a bunch of people, and that kind of turned into fairly regular conversations between myself and Jonty, but also Matt and Katie. And we just started talking quite a lot about, you know, getting this network thing set up. I should say maybe that Matt and Katie are both ex-postgraduate students of mine. So I kind of know them through that. And like, Matt's gone on to become kind of an artist slash design researcher, and Katie has a very kind of self-motivated practice as well. So both of them sit a bit outside of the kind of world of successful commercial design. But yeah, so we were talking a lot, and we were talking about what this group might do. And there was kind of a couple of things. One, we wanted to kind of advocate for design research projects to be exhibited and like museums and galleries and stuff. But also we thought it'd be useful to kind of publish. Basically, we wanted to make design research visible. And then, of course, the more we talked about this, the publishing part especially, Katie and Matt kind of just kept suggesting that it sounded like we were just talking about the National Grid again. And it was really them, it was their idea really to start this again. Jonty and I were both a bit skeptical, and I remained quite skeptical up until I think we actually started work on this issue. Yeah, so that's really how it rolled around. Jonty sort of was involved at the start of the issue, but sort of had to pull out for various reasons. So he hasn't been involved as an editor in this issue, but hopefully he will be again in the future. Feels really different now. Like, the first thing being that, you know, I was saying like the whole getting paid thing was difficult last time. It's, I know from other, I've done kind of publication projects since, you know, proven that it's much easier to get paid now. So I think that's a big change. I think also having more people on board is a big change. And then also the idea to set up an editorial board so that it will work as an academic journal. And we're going to be kind of a hybrid publication in that sense. So if people want the kind of peer review aspect that makes it an academic journal, we can kind of engage the editorial board for that. But also we still want to be able to publish different kinds of writing as well. So I guess, yeah, those are the kind of main differences. And also I guess what Katie and Matt have brought to it makes it feel quite different. Jonty and I are quite similar, I guess. And I think the first kind of run of eight issues will probably feel quite different to this next run for various reasons. I think Jonty and I tend to be kind of cynical old men. And I think Katie and Matt bring optimism to it. Yeah. So maybe it's a better mix now of kind of criticality and optimism.
No, nice. You mentioned at the beginning there that like you felt that when starting the National Grid that there was kind of a gap in the kind of design environment and publication environment in New Zealand. And that's been a big part of what the National Grid was, of course. Kind of bringing it back now, was there something about the current graphic design environment or state of the industry in Aotearoa that made it feel like the right time to bring it back? Do you feel like there's still a gap to fill?
Yeah, although I don't think it's got really anything to do with the industry. I think in the first years, Jonty and I did think part of our job was to be critical of the design industry. I don't think that anymore. I just don't. I mean, I think the design industry does what it does, and that's, you know, largely fine. It's just that's not really what we're interested in. We're much more interested in the roles design plays in sort of politics and culture. Like, that's what's interesting to us. And being able to kind of look at and think about and analyze those things through a critical lens. Yeah. Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You also kind of talked about a little bit earlier how, it, you know, the National Grid was not quite an academic journal, but also not quite a magazine and kind of sitting somewhere in the middle there. You also kind of talked a little bit about some of the differences that it might have going into this kind of new era of it. How have your kind of ambitions with the publication changed in this kind of next era of life for it?
That's a good question. I think one of the big changes, well, it's not a big change. Jonty and I were always, I guess in the first stages, we were very kind of interested in unpacking a design history that existed but wasn't visible. And so this idea that there was an underground design history out there, maybe not so much underground, but just like not documented. Mm. We were quite interested in looking at really normal things. Like Jonty wrote quite a lot about the old scoreboard signs from Carlaw Park, which he managed to kind of get his hands on. Yeah, and I in the very first issue, I interviewed a young Māori designer who ran a record label in Wellington and was doing really cool posters that I'd see around the streets. And I was sort of really aware that stuff we were interested in and we thought was really cool, that was just not being touched by any of the other kind of publications or websites or whatever were around, which at the time was mostly just DINS, the Design Institute of New Zealand, and they sort of published Pro Design. And it's the Best Design Awards that was around. And that, so any, you know, if you wanted to go looking for New Zealand design, that's where you kind of looked. Yeah, and so we were very aware of that we were looking at different stuff, maybe more everyday kind of mundane stuff, but wanting to kind of talk about that in an elevated way. Mm. But then maybe the difference now is that I think partly just because of the timing, I think it's more overtly political now. I think, you know, just because of what's been happening, we have gone quite hard to, you know, kind of draw in Indigenous content, especially in a sense like going looking for that stuff. There's a lot more of it around now. We were kind of interested in that in that first kind of run of issues, but it was really hard to find. It was hard to find anyone who wanted to write about it, whereas it feels very different now. Like that's a bigger conversation. And a conversation that's being had in design schools all over the country. And actually, I think that's another big change too. A lot more people are doing postgraduate design study, whereas back when we were doing the early issues, that wasn't such a thing. And so I think now maybe there's, well, hopefully, we'll find out when we release this issue, but I think there's more interest in it, in kind of reading this kind of stuff, but also people interested in kind of writing about this kind of stuff.
For sure, yeah. For sure. It definitely ties in well to my next question. I want to talk a little bit about this upcoming issue, issue 9. There's some really interesting pieces in it that definitely tie into those kind of goals and refocusing that you've just been talking about there. A feature on Mana magazine, an interview with Extended Whānau on their Together for Te Tiriti Tohu, and a conversation between yourself and international design studies expert Professor Cameron Tonkinwise on design studies in crisis, to name a few that stood out to me, I guess, in that kind of change. Talk me through some of the people who have worked on this issue and the content in it.
So, yeah, we've got a bit of different stuff. I guess kind of in terms of what we were just talking about then, sort of bringing more Indigenous stuff in, the very first kind of major article in this issue is called Design Landscapes, A Brief History of the Futures Cone. And that basically takes the form of a conversation between Matt Galloway, one of our editors, and Hana Pera Aoki. Basically, it's Matt's PhD. Matt did his PhD on this thing called the Futures Cone. I guess I should explain that. The Futures Cone is this kind of diagram, essentially, that kind of suggests different possible ways we could think about the future, and that there are kind of preferable, plausible, and probable futures, and they all sort of span out from this cone. And it's been a kind of very popular sort of diagrammatic device in things like speculative design, so types of design that imagine, that exist to imagine different futures. So Matt did his PhD on that, and then sort of discovered that there were kind of crossovers with sort of types of diagramming that Hana was doing or looking at that relate quite specifically to sort of tikanga and mātauranga Māori. So that's kind of the first big one. The next one is kind of a funny one, actually. It's by a guy who teaches with me down here, Luke Shaw, and he's recently become a stamp collector.
Oh.
Luke Shaw is also an artist, though, and his work revolves around quite often sort of installations to do with sound and the transmitting of sound. And he sort of through another project he did down here about clock towers, he kind of got really interested in lighthouses and then discovered that the New Zealand Government Life Agency did a whole series of stamps for quite a few years, actually, that had different lighthouses from around New Zealand on them. So that's kind of about that. Then we've got a bunch of posters by an Auckland-based designer called Sheehan Hurry, who was actually a student of mine at AUT years ago, a student of mine and Jonty's at AUT, and having him on board's great because he's always been a big fan and a supporter and just a generally encouraging kind of guy. He's also designed the cover for this issue. Then there's my interview with Cameron, and that's really about, it's called Design Studies in Crisis. I think lots of studies are in crisis. That one's really about my sort of anxiety about being an academic in a time of kind of extreme neoliberalism. Cameron has worked all over the world. Like he set up the transition design PhD at Carnegie Mellon and he came back to University of Sydney, University of Technology Sydney, yeah, UTS is where he is, to kind of work there. And then now they're going through these kind of massive upheavals as well. I guess basically the gist of that is that I'm kind of looking at wanting design to still be kind of a form of liberal art study rather than just what it's quite quickly becoming, which is just sort of super large scale schools where students just go to learn the latest software, kind of hard technical skills, which are going to be taken over by AI anyway, right? You know, I think education in general is in at a point of crisis. We really need to think about what education is in the face of AI and also in the face of what we see happening around the world, like fascism taking hold in the United States, you know, and plenty of sympathy for that here too, sadly. Yeah, so that's kind of that piece. The next one, the one you mentioned about the Mana newspaper one, that's actually based on an exhibition that was held at the Auckland Museum. And so it's basically the curators of that produced that article for us, and we've kind of reproduced pages from Mana. Mana's super interesting. I mean, it only existed for a couple of years, but it was a kind of Maori and Pacifica newspaper printed in Auckland. Super interesting for multiple reasons, like A, politically, and Indigenous people trying to kind of claim agency through publishing, like that's super interesting. But also as a designer, one of the really interesting things about it is that it's published in different languages. So there's some really kind of interesting things that happen there with that. The next one is by someone who was from New Zealand but now lives in, I think Switzerland or France? France, Nell May, and she has just recently done her master's at, I think, ICAL, and it's basically for her master's she's generated typefaces, designed typefaces specifically to be seen on like dark backgrounds on phones. So it's about light, typefaces to be seen with light rather than typefaces printed on things, like, which is why we've always designed typefaces in the past. And she sort of talks a lot about the history of, light on dark typefaces. That's a really interesting piece. And publishing kind of recent, kind of graduate, postgraduate work I think is a really great thing for us to be doing. The next one is a kind of four-way interview that Katie did with Extended Whānau. And yeah, obviously that's super interesting and super timely. It's about the tohu they designed. That's a really good one. And then we end on a kind of funny little short piece called Language Support, which will be a kind of regular column that we'll have in every issue now. And that will be written by David Benaworth and Warren Olds.
That was co-editor and co-founder of the National Grid, Luke Wood, speaking to me about the Graphic Design Journal's revival and upcoming 9th issue. Issue 9 is available now for pre-order from thenationalgrid.net, and you can also join the editors to celebrate the issue at its launch at Object Space this coming Monday, 10th of November from 5:30 p.m.